Don Lebatard.
Man, I hope the future looks like whatever Elon Musk is imagining.
Imagining is the right word, because he ain't doing anything. He's just thinking about it.
I don't think it's fair to say he's not doing
anything. Well, what's he doing? I mean,
Stugatz.
Seriously, what does he produce, though?
Tesla?
Well, besides that, the ideas are great. The ideas are great. Great ideas. The execution.
I mean, of course, because they've never been done before.
Well, let's go.
Okay.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz on ESPN Radio.
All guests on the Don Lebatard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. V-Week officially starts tomorrow with Giving Tuesday. During these challenging times, ESPN and the V Foundation's fight against cancer has not stopped. If you are able, please support cancer research by visiting v.org/donate. 100% of what you give goes to cancer research.
We've got funniest thing from the sports weekend coming up later this hour. Also, Rosie Perez is going to join us to break down Tyson and Jones. She is our boxing expert. But before we get to anything else, because what is happening in Vanderbilt is interesting for a lot of different reasons, let's check in first with Christine Lisi.
And finally, actor Faison Love claims he was whitewashed from the international marketing of the 2009 comedy Couples Retreat. Now the actor is suing Universal Studios for money he feels he was entitled to but did not get.
Okay.
All right.
Just a little bit of entertainment news. No darkness, no slights, no cruelty from Christine Lisi. Just a little bit of entertainment.
I'm happy.
It's actually not that all surprising. I think this became a thing like 10 years ago when people were highlighting what he looked like in the posters on the, in the international marketing. It's all the white celebrities in the front, and way off in the back, you need a magnifying glass to see him, is Faison Love, who's part of an ensemble, but totally whitewashed there.
Did you guys see, off topic on this, and again, Rosie Perez will join us in a half hour. Did you guys see what Chappelle did when he was talking about Netflix and HBO Max and the fact that as a young kid, he had to sign paperwork that didn't allow him basically to keep even his own name, that he was naive. And so right now, HBO Max and Netflix, well, not Netflix anymore, but the two of them were airing Chappelle's show, and he wasn't seeing any money from it at all. So he did like an 18-minute routine that was more insightful and wonderful storytelling than it was funny. But he was talking about it, and he did some of this on Saturday Night Live, where he's saying, you know, my grandfather was bought and sold, and I've been bought and sold that way in the modern climate. He fights fiercely for his independence, but the reason he left Comedy Central and went to Africa and the whole machine came down on him as crazy is because he was objecting to some of these ownerships that the corporations had over someone like Chappelle. And so when I read that story to you, Stugatz, about the corporations doing what they evidently and reportedly are doing with China, because you got to keep that money flowing because we're run by the corporations. The idea that Chappelle would be bucking against it by telling Netflix, hey, this is wrong what you're doing. And Netflix having the relationship with him and the ability to have the kind of FU money that actually has power, as opposed to all these other corporations that have the FU money but don't actually use it. Netflix is saying, you know what, Dave, you're right. You feel cruddy about this? We won't do it. We won't put out Chappelle's show just because you don't own it and others do. And he's asked people not to watch it on HBO Max because unless he gets money, he wants money for his.
He wants one of those two entities to pay him for his content.
If you're going
to
use his name, and he says, but he also says, and this part
Who did he do the content for? Was there like
it's Comedy Central is where it started, and then it's got, you know, the overseeing branch of corporate overlords. But he finds himself in a place where he's actually talking about doing Chappelle's show again, but he's got to name it something else because he doesn't own his name.
Right, that's crazy. I mean, it's crazy that he's arrived in a place, and he's not alone, where he does not own his own name and has to come up with a different name for his show. I'd like to see that again, right? Wouldn't you? I mean, even with a different name, a Chappelle show? Right?
I mean, it's just kind of cool that Netflix would be like, okay, Dave, like we have this multi-million-dollar deal with you and your stand-up, so let's not jeopardize that. If this hurts your feelings, we'll go ahead and just take care of your feelings, because there's no other reason for them to do this other than just making sure Chappelle's cool with them.
Netflix is doing a lot of stuff for comedy and has been rewarding comedians in a way that has been mutually beneficial for their money making and the laughs. But when you see the difference between, and this is always fascinating to me, Stugatz, when the late night game was Letterman and Leno. Letterman had the admiration of the audience, but Leno had the audience. Kevin Hart has the audience. He's popular, but he has to be somewhat neutered. He has to be something less than Chappelle in order to have the audience. Chappelle's got the critical acclaim. And so Kevin Hart is doing, during the middle of this, because Kevin Hart is grabbing at money everywhere, grabbing at work everywhere. He's got a lot of people and a lot of responsibilities. And he's talked about how he envies the freedom that Chappelle has, because he just shows up and does 40 minutes somewhere. And it's not with all these people hanging on him. You see during a pandemic, Kevin Hart releasing what looks like a stand-up special in his home. And I don't know if it's very good or not. I just know that compared to what Chappelle is doing, it pales substantively in substance, because Chappelle has not the same kind of popular following, but he's got all of the comedy credentials where even Kevin Hart has to genuflect and be like, man, you're just, I'm the popular one.
It's a more loyal following.
You're better. It's on merit. It's not, you have to dumb things down. You've seen this everywhere, Stugatz. You have to dumb things down in order to cast the broadest net. You have to be something.
If you want to star in Jumanji, you have to be more accessible. But I wouldn't say Kevin Hart is more, I mean, popularity is interesting, because I would say Chappelle's
football stadium. No, Mike, look,
yeah, but Chappelle could fill a football stadium too if he wanted to.
There's only one stand.
Chappelle could have that popularity.
There's only one stand. But because this is the thing about Chappelle that's fascinating, he is what he is because he wouldn't do that. It was the same kind of stuff Louis C.K. was trying to do when he was trying to make, you know, something. He was sort of, you know, selling his act to people individually. Pay what you want to pay here. I don't want to let the companies get rich. And that, is that over now with CK? Is it just simply over, never going to return?
Yeah, and people aren't really satisfied with the
apology. I really thought that if anyone could figure out a way to survive some of that.
He's not really apologizing either, in ways that would sort of welcome him back to the popular masses' good graces. It's probably going to be a while for Louis C.K. if he can even come back, because he was the case that we thought, oh, this will be interesting because he's smart enough and he's funny
enough. He's clearly not, though. He hasn't been able to maneuver around it creatively in any way. He does some shows in New York and they get a lot of applause and stuff, but the reaction is so poisonous to him making a career of it again that people haven't forgiven in any way. And I think Mike's right. It's because they haven't gotten anything in the way of contrition.
Would you rather have the admiration or the audience? I think that's a pretty easy answer for you.
No,
right?
I'd rather have the authenticity of the work and not care whether it's popular or not. Like, hopefully you can make a living either way, but Kevin Hart speaks with jealousy of Dave Chappelle, and I'm certain Kevin Hart makes more than Dave Chappelle. Kevin Hart is an economy, but in order to be an economy like that that fills football stadiums, you have to cast such a broad net that the funny can't be as edgy. Man, Kevin Hart's apologizing every couple of weeks or explaining something every couple of weeks. Because he's running up against the edge of just this antiseptic blandness.
Meanwhile, Chappelle won't really walk back.
He doesn't have to.
His transphobic stuff.
He's not beholden to anybody, though. And so he can push. The other comedians follow him, Mike, because he doesn't have to fear anybody. He can just go and do. He's the only one out there right now who's able to press against the boundary, while all these other comedians, even on this Comedy Store documentary on Showtime, where all these other comedians are lamenting the death of comedy, political correctness, I don't get to do my act the way I want to, there are consequences on my edginess, this is too sensitive a climate.
How about Kevin Hart stop apologizing and fix it?
I mean, he keeps making different kinds of mistakes.
Right. But making them.
Okay, oh, very good, Stugatz.
Well, I mean, if you want it so badly, you're not a
mistake maker. I could see where you would say, stop making mistakes to human beings who become human beings, at least in part because they make mistakes.
Listen, I don't apologize for this, okay? I don't want the admiration. I want the popularity. I want the audience. I want the money that comes with that. I want to cast a wide net, okay? I'm not apologizing every couple of weeks because I want to be you. If I wanted to be you, I'd try to be you. That's all I'm saying. I can't be you, so I just stay me.
Nothing in life is free. Time for some ads.
Why are you comparing us to like
no idea.
To Chappelle and
weird
Kevin
comparison.
Hart? Like, what are you doing? Us?
Just felt like it would hit home, you know, and it did.
But us? Like, what are you talking about?
I'll just say it. Stop apologizing for what you're not and embrace what it is that you are. And what you are is a guy who decided to sell out stadiums, okay? I don't want to hear the apologies.
But Gatz, that is the difference. If you want to hit this with judgment, you said sell out stadiums, and all I heard in terms of a phrase was sell out. Like, that's the difference between the two of them. That's the difference between both of them that in terms of what the criticism is they get. Why one of them will be an enduring comedy legend and the other is just Kevin Hart.
Just doing a cursory search here while we're talking about him, but the kind of deal that Chappelle has with Netflix is in 2016, this is from his Wikipedia page, he signed a $20 million per release deal with Netflix. And since that deal, as of 2019, I think he's recently released one, although I don't know what the deal and status is of that one that went on YouTube over the summer, but he's released 5 stand-up specials in that time window. So every time he releases a special that ends up on Netflix, $20 million.
It's real freedom, man. It's what Kevin Hart envies.
Levitard.
That movie was good, man. 300? Roy, are you disputing? Roy, I will fight you. At Levitard Show, Guillermo, was 300 good?
Stugatz.
I'll argue 300 is the best action movie of all time.
Oh, get out of here.
Fight me.
Get out of here.
Fight me.
I'll fight you with Tango and Cash.
Don't at me.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz on ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if they could save you hundreds on your car insurance. We'll get to conversational in just a second here, but first it's time for Straight Talk. It is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless.
Rosie Perez in about 15 minutes, and funniest thing from the sports weekend coming up here. We're going to talk about this casually. What are we talking about casually? Le Batard and Friends and the local hour today are very strong. They are a lot of fun today before we started nationally.
Local hour, Big Suey, recapping what was a very busy sports week. And I really enjoyed what we did this morning. And plus, I'll have 2 episodes of Stupidity coming out this week.
South Beach Sessions drops tomorrow. We talked to Doc Emmerich, who just retired. Probably, or at least arguably, one of the best play-by-play men of his generation. Super prepared, and he has great stories.
Speaking of great stories, and we can't have nice things, okay? This story from the weekend. I don't know how the historic putting of Sarah Fuller, a mm-hmm. woman in a college football game, could have gone less historically than it did, given the circumstances, given that it became a squib kick, it became no field goals, no extra points, it ends with the coach getting fired, and also now reports are she was giving a halftime speech criticizing the teammates for not having any energy on the sidelines. Ooh, and
leader.
That one is interesting as the kicker who hasn't played with the team and hasn't suffered the collisions giving a halftime speech. Does that have anything to do with why the coach was fired? Like, they're doing something. Vanderbilt football has been irrelevant for as long as Vanderbilt football has been alive. Vanderbilt football exists to simply lose, to just wander around and lose. Their basketball program has had some success, but what is the most successful season you guys can remember Vanderbilt having of any kind in football? What is the memorable one? Who is the memorable coach? Derek Mason has now been fired. Does it have anything to do with this story where for the first time in the history of that program, they got some national attention? That program could not be more irrelevant in our lifetimes. And it ends with a squib kick, no points, and the coach being fired. And she's giving a halftime speech, and everyone's looking around like, look, all of this can be historic without her telling her teammates they're not doing enough on the sidelines. Like, I can't believe that she was making a halftime speech.
It's when crazy.
They wouldn't have let a kicker of any kind in the history of football make – a halftime speech.
I think as it relates to Mason, though, it's probably the 3-17 record over his last two seasons.
That's good for Vanderbilt.
I don't think it is.
James Franklin had the Commodores making noise, Dan.
That's right, James Franklin.
Oh, yes. That's right. That wasn't even that long ago. They made some noise, and they had all sorts of off-field problems, and then James Franklin went to Penn State, parlayed it. They had all sorts of criminal behavior and whatnot on the when they got good for 5 minutes, and then James Franklin cashed in and left this in his way.
They also had Jay Cutler over there, but I don't think those seasons were any good.
He'll be leaving stuff in his wake when he leaves Penn State as well. I mean, read some of the stories there.
Well, I was curious the timing on some of those stories finally coming out.
When he starts 0-3, well, those stories were incomplete as well, to be fair to James Franklin, in terms of the police not pressing charges on some of that stuff or finding enough evidence and proof to do anything.
The timing of those things coming out.
That felt like that, right? It felt like, oh, you started for 0-3 for the first time in 19 years. Here's a story that's dirty.
He had back-to-back 9-4s at Vandy.
That's true. That's why he got that Penn State job. But there was a report of a fight between teammates that involved a knife, and James Franklin wasn't reportedly told one of them not to talk to police. But there wasn't enough evidence. The police did look into that a couple of different times. I noticed what Mike did, the timing. Oh, after 0-3, somebody sent this out
there.
You
didn't think that to yourself when you saw it across the bottom line? I'm like, how many years ago was this? Why are we seeing this now? It was just curious.
Were the Jay Cutler years good ones?
They were okay.
They were good to Jay Cutler.
They were okay. But how about the story? Like, how much more could you foul it up than this? Where it ends in the coach being fired, 0 points, and the fact that now there are reports that she gave a halftime speech that everybody was sort of scratching their head and saying, is this a publicity stunt?
When I see what happened with Derek Mason, I think, was this game on SEC Network? This wasn't a real national stage, but people were going out of their way to find Vanderbilt football, which is the first time since at least James Franklin.
To see them score.
To see them score. And what Bomani was tweeting about over the weekend, what happened with Matt Patricia and him losing his job. Don't embarrass yourself on the national stage, because maybe you can get away with that, getting blanked by Mizzou week one with no one ever really paying attention. But when you break barriers in the Power Five, you can't go scoreless like that and be blown out by a team that isn't thought of as the nation's elite.
How are you feeling about that if you're in the locker room and you're getting a speech from a kicker telling you that your sideline doesn't have enough energy? Like in that locker room, someone who just arrived and all she has done is a squib kick in her history of playing football because the pandemic hit Vanderbilt and they had to go to the soccer team to get one of the players. Like, it is fairly amazing. Would you guys not agree that we go from empowerment story to embarrassment at every turn, that they can't get it right, fire the coach, no points, and also reports that she's making a speech she shouldn't be making?
I mean, outside of like going 3-for-3 and nailing like a 48-yard field goal, you could see this turning this way. What I didn't expect is her actually making the speech, because I don't know how you process that just from a kicker, let alone one that's breaking barriers.
But how do you think that goes over? You think the guys are rolling their eyes? You think this is coming from a pretty good source?
I would say, I don't know. I have no idea what goes on in that locker room, how they were galvanized by her. I don't know enough
about
the
story. Well, they came out and scored as many points in the second half as they had in the first.
Don Lebatard.
Stugatz is disgusting.
Stugatz.
Yep.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz on ESPN Radio.
Rosie Perez, just a minute here on the Shell Penzoil Performance Line, our boxing correspondent. The Monday Night Football Preview is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. The 7-3 Seahawks head to Philadelphia to play the 3-6-1 Eagles. Oh, that one, Dan. If they win tonight, they're in first place. Want to know why? Because of that one. 4-6-1, if they win tonight. The Eagles have had a tough time playing Seattle. Russell Wilson himself has won 5 consecutive games against them. If the Eagles have any hope in keeping up in the game, they'll have to take advantage of the Seahawks' poor passing defense, which comes into Sunday. Was dead last in passing yards allowed at 343.7 yards per game. The Seahawks have also given up 28.7 points per game, which is very high. But they make up for that, scoring 31.8 points per game, second best in the NFL. Protecting your small business is a big deal. Cover what you work so hard for. Visit progressivecommercial.com. Do it today.
All right, we will get to Rosie Perez in boxing analysis in a second, but because she comes from the height of entertainment, we will show her the production quality of our show with the kazoos and Christine Lisi.
And finally, scientists are finally able to turn peanut butter into diamonds. How about that?
How about that?
All right, put it on the poll, Guillermo. Did you know peanut butter could be turned into diamonds by scientists? Her new HBO Max show, The Flight Attendant, premiered on Thanksgiving. I want to get into that. I saw her the other day in a preview for it. I'm like, that looks funny, and that looks like light, easy viewing. Rosie Perez with us on ESPN Radio, as usual, after the biggest of fights.
That was the boxing match on Saturday.
How sad were you, Rosie? And thank you, as always, for making the time for us. As a lover of boxing, do you side with, I love that because it's good to watch the sport have the spotlight, or are you with Snoop Dogg, that looks like two of my uncles fighting at the barbecue?
Oh, man, Snoop Dogg had me cracking up. I was dying when he said that. But, you know, I got to give it to these guys. They're both over 50, a combined age of 105. Come on, man. You know what I mean? I got arthritis in both knees. I got two torn meniscus discs, you know, a hairline fracture in my hip. I ain't trying to get in a boxing ring like that. I thought they did all right. I did. I thought they did all right. I didn't think they did spectacular. I wouldn't go that far. But I respected that, you know, that they went in there and they took it seriously.
Rosie, what happened? Is that from dancing? What happened? Did you just say that your body is all busted up because of how aggressively you danced?
Yes, 100%. You know, dancing hip-hop in high heels, too, wasn't really smart. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, well, you told us, right? The beginning of Do the Right Thing, you said Spike had you out there for, what, 8, 10 hours?
8 hours. 8 hours and 15 minutes. That's how long he had me out there. And I developed a tennis elbow by throwing those horrible punches I was throwing. I was so tired. Yeah, but my body did take a toll. You know, dancing is hard, you know, and plus I was, you know, doing hip-hop and jumping up and banging my knees on concrete. It was so stupid, but I loved it, but I pay for it now.
When people want to talk to you, is it mostly, like, the majority of questions you get about your career, is it the opening scene and Do the Right Thing?
No. The majority of questions I get is actually from about White Man Can't Jump. And was I crushing on Woody Harrelson?
Okay, that's right. That's right.
That's the number one question.
What the sexual tension between you, and the answer to that question?
Absolutely.
Scandalous.
With all due respect to his wife, Laura, she knows it.
Rosie Perez with us here on ESPN Radio. Her new HBO Max show, The Flight Attendant, premiered on Thanksgiving.
It looks fun. It looks like a fun, funny show.
It does. Catch the next two episodes on HBO Max this Thursday. Rosie, just going back to the fight for a second, any part of that make you sad at all, just watching those two go at it?
What made me sad was Roy Jones. I mean, he was holding on for dear life. He was feeling those body punches. You know what I mean? And I question. I know Mike Tyson says he's gotten high before he started fighting in a championship fight, and that he got high last Saturday night as well. You know, but imagine if he wasn't high. Jesus Christmas, I'll tell you. I mean, you know, for a 54-year-old man, he was hitting really, really hard, and I felt bad for Roy. But the person that I really felt bad for Saturday night was Nate, man. Oh, my God. You know?
All right, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a second. Hold on, though. Is Rosie Perez breaking the news right here? I'd like to see it on the ESPN scroll that Mike Tyson fought that fight high.
Oh, did I say that out loud?
Okay. So Nate Robinson, were you hoping you followed his basketball career with the Knicks, right? Were you hoping for something better than that?
I was hoping for something better than that because the fight game is real. You know what I'm saying? It's a serious sport. It's the hype business, you know? And that poor guy, at least he took it seriously. He was, you know, sparring with real professional fighters. You don't go in there, you know, and say, oh, I boxed. Even if you were boxing, even in a regular boxing gym for a year, if you're not sparring with professionals, you're not taking it seriously, you're going to get knocked the hell out like he did, you know. And I was scared. He was face down. That was like a Pacquiao knockout. You know what I mean? It was scary. I was like, is he going to get off? And then my sister calls me and goes, well, he has another career. And I said, what? And he goes, in mattress commercials. I said, oh, you are horrible. That is terrible.
It doesn't sound like you found it so terrible. It sounds like you enjoyed sharing that story and that you see the funny in that story. Because is Jake Paul any good as a boxer?
I thought he was decent. I wouldn't say that he's a professional fighter, no. But I thought he was decent, you know. The haters are going to hate, but at least he tried to do his homework. He took it seriously, you know, and he delivered, you know, a solid punch, a solid legal punch, and knocked him the hell out.
I
give it to him.
Would you like to hear more Snoop Dogg doing broadcasts? Like, is that something you would like a little more with your sports coverage?
I would love it. I mean, with the cursing, and you know, you're talking to me, I mean, sometimes I can curse like a truck driver, but the cursing I could have done without, but his commentary really just lifted the whole night for me. I thought it was hilarious. I mean, we were bent over laughing, you know, with him, you know. And I know, the concerts I could do without, and that's with all due respect, I love Wiz Khalifa, I love Snoop Dogg, you know, I don't know. When I go to a fight, I want to see the fight. The only entertainment I want to see is the Star Spangled Banger being sung. That's about it. That's about it. But, you know, Snoop Dogg, definitely. I would love to see him ringside at every single fight because he just kept it real. It was hilarious.
But, Rosie, you love boxing. So he was perfect for that venue for Saturday night because you're right. He made it entertaining. He made it fun. You love boxing. If I put Snoop Dogg on a serious, serious fight, would you be into that? Because I would.
I would be into it. I would be into it. You know what I mean? I think that he would take it a little bit more seriously, but he would still bring the funny. And that's nice. You know what I mean? So, you know, you want the excitement. You know, I mean, really good color commentaries are ones that are not just filled with knowledge, but also filled with fun, you know, and excitement.
Is there a fight that Rosie Perez is most eager to see once things get a little more back to normal?
Yes. I want to see Spence versus Garcia. I want to see that really badly. And I want to see after that the winner fight Terrence Crawford because Terrence Crawford, man, they're putting this man on the shelf. They're waiting for him to age out because they are scared of him. I don't care what they say. Everyone is scared of him because if you weren't scared of him, you would have fought this man already. You know, that they're trying to do a triple G to him. But, you know, Terrence Crawford is a mean, mean man, and he got a mean punch. And so, yeah, so first Spence Garcia, after that Terrence, versus anybody.
We can't talk to you enough, Rosie. Before we get you out of here, again, the flight attendant, she's on it, and so I've got it right? Fun and funny.
It's fun and funny. It's a murder mystery. It's really dark comedy, you know, and I had a ball on it, and Kaley Cuoco from The Big Bang Theory, people are going to be very surprised by her. She carries the show, and she kicks ass. I mean, the whole cast is great, and I had a ball playing my character, Megan. She's a hot mess. And it was fun playing her.
Rosie, good talking to you.
You're
next
awesome,
time,
Rosie.
We got to get you and Teddy Atlas together to have a boxing conversation. Always good checking in with you. Thank you, Rosie.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thank you, Rosie.
Don Lebatard.
The Gronk's Prayer. Our Gronk, who scores in sevens, hallowed be thy brain, thy kingdom dumb, thy will mix rum, on turf as it is in heaven.
Stugats.
Feed us this day our daily meat spread, and don't forgive us our trespasses as we don't forgive those who double cover against us. Lead us directly and repeatedly into temptation, but deliver that sexy body from evil. For spikes in the end zone with great power bring you glory forever. Amen.
This is the Don Lebatard Show. With the Stugats on ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Today is for doing, and today we celebrate Sarah Fuller. She deserves it. The starting goalkeeper on the Vanderbilt Commodores ladies soccer team was called into football action due to the team experiencing COVID-19 restrictions. The Commodores didn't score a single point versus Missouri, eventually losing 41-0, which meant Fuller had only one kick that day. The second half kickoff. It was a squib kick using a holder which was then down on the Tigers' 35-yard line. Vandy coach Derek Mason, I should say former Vandy coach Derek Mason, said Fuller executed the kick exactly as it was designed. The kick made Sarah Fuller the first woman to ever play in a Power 5 football game and is the third woman to participate in an FBS football game following in the footsteps of Kate Nida of New Mexico and April Goss of Kent State.
Was that of?
Yeah, I got caught up there. Today is for doing, and it's brought to you by the Home Depot with everything you need to do projects smarter, faster, and easier. Welcome to today's Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Funniest thing from the sports weekend, let's do it.
Hey, people, tell us what in the sport made you laugh hard this weekend. It is a segment we call What Made You Laugh This Weekend. Ha, ha, ha!
Funniest thing from the sports weekend is brought to you by Dell. Big news from Dell Technology. Cyber Monday is here. With deals up to 50% off small business computers with Intel Core processors to give your business an edge. Call 877-ASK-DELL or visit Dell.com/SB Cyber Monday.
Billy, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Tyreek Hill's multiple celebrations on his big catches. One of them had him giving a peace sign to a defender. The other one had him backflipping into the end zone.
That athleticism was crazy. Before he scored the touchdown, backflipping. He was on pace for a 1,000-yard game yesterday.
He's good.
200-plus yards in the first quarter. Tony, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Snoop Dogg saying that the Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. fight were like two uncles fighting at a barbecue.
People really liked Snoop Dogg on that telecast. Chris, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Am I allowed to feel bad for Nate Robinson and still think him getting knocked out is the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
You are not. Okay. Roy, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
The Denver Broncos had more interceptions, two, than pass completions.
Oof.
One.
Yeah, that was tough. Oof. Yeah. At Le Batard Show, put it on the poll, Guillermo. Are you allowed to laugh uproariously in the face of Nate Robinson and also feel bad for him at the same time? Mike Ryan, funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Discovering Oklahoma Sooners power forward Brady Manek over the weekend. I don't know if you've seen this guy's look. When I saw a video of him just talking about a transfer that came to the program, I thought it was one of these new reface filters or something like that. I thought someone put a Larry Bird filter on someone talking, but he's going for this outlandish look, and it's pretty hilarious.
Tell the people the name again so they
Brady can Manek.
Google it. This is a segment we like to call Google It.
Give it a search on Twitter so you see the very most up-to-date photo of Brady Manek.
All right.
Stugatz, how about you?
Jameis Winston having to hold the clipboard during an entire game where both quarterbacks combined for 91 passing yards, zero touchdowns, three interceptions, and a fumble.
It was so hard to watch. Remind me at some point here to ask the question publicly and get into a conversation about how much Reese Davis is being paid for that Coca-Cola commercial where all he does is take a sip, and it's the back of his head, take a sip of Coca-Cola, because we have to get to the bottom of that. But I think the funniest thing I saw this sports weekend was just Mike Glennon scrambling. It's like a baby giraffe out there. I mean, it
is pretty good, Glennon.
But scrambling, the specifics of him scrambling, it is like seeing a baby giraffe give birth to a quarterback, and as it falls on the ground, it learns how to roll to its left and throw a 2-point conversion that fails in a loss.